let me write this down. So Bonamici wants the A7 to 487?
She wants the A7 to 487, and that's not ready to go.
Okay. We're going to open up a public hearing on
8:46.
8:46, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, good morning, everyone. We'll open the Committee on General Government Consumer Protection. It's Thursday, May the 19th, 2011. It's nice to wake up this morning, and we're used to this in Central Oregon, but to see that white thing up in the sky. We're going to start, as we're trying to finish our agenda and address all the bills, there will be some carryovers, but I think I can't tell you exactly that we won't open a work session to put in amendments. We're still getting amendments. But we're going to start off with having a public hearing on Senate Bill 846A. I don't think I open the meeting first? I got to open the meeting. Then I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 846A. Jan, would you go ahead and give us...
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 846A requires a manufacturer of bicycle trailers that are designed to carry people to affix a label that informs the consumer if the trailer conforms or does not conform to standards that are in effect on January 1st of 2011. And it allows a person to bring a civil action to recover actual damages against a manufacturer if the trailer does not have the required label. And it applies to trailers sold on or after the effective date. And there are no amendments before you. There's no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator. We wish you luck and safety this weekend as you venture over to beautiful Central Oregon to participate in the Popel PPP.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs. I hate to say this. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to participate.
Senator,
I was going
Dink
to do the bike. Because of other conflicts, I'm not going to be able to be over in Central Oregon, which I'd love to, because I think the course is going to be great for those who are going to be participating.
Thank you for this comment. Please identify yourself, Senator, and I hope it wasn't you weren't replaced by Senator Dinkfelder because she's faster or something.
Actually, I don't think she's doing. I think we're bringing in the secret agent of Senator Burdick on the bike. So thank you very much. For the record, Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas County. I thank the co-chairs and the committee for hearing today and taking my testimony on Senate Bill 846. Let me just say that the origin of the bill came after another bill had been put forward that was going to basically prohibit young people from being able to be transported on a trailer. At the very beginning of the session, Representative Greenlech was the sponsor of that bill, and I know his heart was in the right places to wanting to make certain there's safety for the young people, but as many people became aware of it, they were very concerned with what the true ramifications would be for everyone. So I say that because Representative Greenlech is also one of the sponsors of the bill. We sat down, we talked. He thought that this also would be a better and more meaningful way to go. So what Senate Bill 846 will do will just require the manufacturer to place or affix onto their trailers whether or not the trailer that is designed for human passengers does in fact conform or not conform to the ASTM International Specifications for Trailer Safety. The reason I brought this forward is because I believe that I think it's important for consumers when they are purchasing trailers, especially ones that are made for and designed for human passengers and more than likely probably for children, to realize whether or not what they're buying is what they think they're actually getting. This will not prohibit the sale of a trailer that doesn't meet that standard. It just informs the consumer before they purchase it as to whether it does or doesn't. I do want to put on the record that I know that this bill does in fact call for prevailing plaintiffs to be able to recover their attorney fees. I know that may cause some issues for some of the members, and I am more than willing to provide an amendment that we actually had ready and offered on the other side because one of the senators said that they thought it should only be equal. I personally think it makes no difference because the only time you're going to see one of these cases go forward is where there's not a label affixed to the trailer. It's going to be very shut, close, open and shut type of a case. And so I don't think there's going to be a run amok of litigation in this. But if the
committee would like to have that. I can turn that to the committee administrator. Now, what I'd like to just close on is that a story, as I mentioned to you at the very beginning, this concept came to me through Burley Trailers and Bike Manufacturers. They are a Eugene organization. They make extremely good products. They make one of the best trailers available in the country, and probably one of the two in North America with a Canadian company called Chariot. All of their trailers do, in fact, meet the standard of the ASTM. And after we passed the bill on the Senate side, the president of Burley sent me a comment that came in on their website. And if you'd indulge me, I will just read what it says. It's coming from a consumer who purchased one of their trailers, and it says, "I just wanted to thank you for making such a great product, and bar none, the safest trailers in the world. My son and I were rear-ended by a vehicle this week, and he flipped in the trailer, and we were pushed across the street 30 feet. Although he was scared out of his mind, I pulled him out with nothing more than a small scratch on his knee." That is the difference of a person having the informed, of knowing that they could actually buy a trailer that's going to protect life, their child, as compared to one that's not. And I just think a consumer should have that right to know before they purchase one whether it does or does not meet that standard. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony in support of this. Senator, our administrator has your proposed amendment.
I don't think they do, but we had it on the Senate side. I can make sure I can get it to her this morning.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think the Representative Chair Hovey and I will talk about that and see if it might be a good thing to get it started in the process. So, thank you.
We'll deliver it today.
Committee members, questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator, for bringing the bill, and also thank you for finding the way to deal with this issue that is important for the safety of children without the far-reaching bill prior to. And I agree with you. I think Representative Greenlake had the, you know, his heart's in the right spot. My question is, this deals with in-state manufacturers, is that correct? So what about some of the, like, Instep, Schwinn, some of the, and I'm just to be completely transparent, I went to Target's website really quick to see what they're selling as far as trailers go. I've seen some trailers that end up, you know, as a result of accidents and sometimes slipping off a road, so I completely get where we're going. I have no problems with the bill. But like an Instep or Schwinn, they're probably not manufactured in the state. People could still buy those trailers, but do they currently have stickers? Is that part of their production label?
All right, to the co-chairs and to Representative Matthews, this bill would require any manufacturer who is selling a trailer in the state of Oregon to meet this standard of affixing to their trailer. So it doesn't matter whether the trailer is built in-state or out-of-state. It's my understanding from speaking to the President of Burley, it just depends on the manufacturer whether or not they're identifying their trailer does or doesn't meet those standards.
Okay, great. Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, committee members? Okay, thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 846A to allow testimony from Senator Bonamici on her bill. So, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 846. Committee members, Senator, I'm going to open public hearing on all three of your bills.
I'm here for 487 and 292.
Okay. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 487 and Senate Bill 292 to allow the Senator to... Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you going to be working on redistricting?
Committee, thank you very much for accommodating me this morning. Suzanne Bonamici, represent Senate District 17. The chair of the Judiciary Committee, who just left, will be waiting for me shortly, so I appreciate the accommodation. I'm here to talk briefly about Senate Bill 487 and Senate Bill 292. But before I do, I hope you'll indulge me for just a moment to make a couple of comments. I did this morning read co-vice chair Representative Sheehan's letter to the Oregonian, and I wanted to make a couple of general comments about consumer protection in general and about its impact on businesses. Mm-hmm. I've been working in the area of consumer protection for many years, and I wanted to tell the committee that one of the main reasons for consumer protection, of course, is to look out for consumers, but it's also to create a fair playing field in the marketplace. Most of the businesses in Oregon do operate fairly and honestly, and when there are businesses that do not, they can get a competitive advantage, an unfair competitive advantage over those who are operating under the rules. And I found an example in the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. When that law was passed, one of the purposes, they said, of that law, which is one of our federal consumer protection laws, is to ensure that those debt collectors who refrain from using abusive debt collection practices are not competitively disadvantaged. So I wanted to make the point that consumer protection is not just to protect consumers, it's also to protect all of those businesses who are operating fairly. Another main reason that consumer protection is important, especially in difficult economic times, is that it helps to rebuild consumer confidence. And a little historical example of that is after the Wall Street crash in 1929, the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934 was passed, and that really did help restore consumer confidence in the marketplace. So I wanted to make those sort of preliminary comments as you consider consumer protection bills, that there's also a couple of other reasons, not just with a focus on the consumers, to protect all of those businesses, which are most of them, that are operating fairly and honestly. So with regard to Senate Bill 487, thank you for scheduling this today. This is the bill that deals with automatic renewal of contracts, and I just wanted to let you know that I know you have a couple of amendments before you. The Dash A7 amendment is an amendment that I'm fine with. I would support that amendment. That deals with whether the disclosure requirements can be included in a billing statement or invoice that's already provided to the consumer. And I think that's a good amendment that will make it easier for businesses to comply with this disclosure requirement. The other amendments I would not support, Co-Chair Wisnett and Co-Chair Holvey and committee, because I believe that they would weaken the intent of the bill. With regard to Senate Bill 292, that's the free trial bill that we spent a lot of time during the interim working on this bill with lots of people around the table. There is a Dash A5 amendment that removes the emergency clause. I would support that amendment if it takes a bit of time to get the disclosure forms done. I think that's a good amendment, and I would support that. Again, the other amendments I don't think are necessary. So the A5 amendment to remove the emergency clause from the free trial bill, I would support, and the A7 on 487. And in closing, co-chairs and committee members, both of these bills, they're similar in their approach. They're disclosure bills. They don't ban particular practices. They allow the practices with clear and conspicuous disclosure. Again, that's a way so we can accommodate the business practices but make sure that they're fair to consumers. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Questions? The Senator, before she goes to committee, please. Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for pointing out that I was my letter was published today. I did not know
That's
that. I just looked it up really quick, and I don't believe the content of that letter had anything to do with either of your bills. But regardless, I do have a question about clear and conspicuous language. I know both bills have a different definition for clear and conspicuous language, and as someone who works in advertising, I'm critical of 487, especially because it refers to larger type than surrounding text, font and color on surrounding text, whereas the other, 292, it says the language that is readily understandable and presented. Why is there a difference between the two definitions of clear and conspicuous language?
Why there's a difference is probably because of the way they were drafted. I know that 292, we went through a work group process. 487 was based on a recently passed California law. I don't know that there's in reality that much of a difference in as they're being implemented. I do know that clear and conspicuous are terms that are frequently used in consumer protection legislation, and there's probably a lot of definitions of that. I know that someone is here today, Keith Dabanovich from the Department of Justice, who may be able to address how those phrases have been interpreted. But my understanding is that they're commonly used phrases.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions, committee members? Okay, thank you, Senator,
you
for bringing these forth and for looking after the consumers.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, committee members, we're going to close the public hearing we opened on Senate Bill 292A and Senate Bill 487A will be closed. We're going to start back at the top of the agenda and open a public hearing possible work session on Senate Bill 16A. Jan, please give us a status where we are on this bill.
And Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 16A was heard by the committee. It's a bill that allows the state treasurer to name a designee to serve in lieu of the treasurer on Oregon's 529 College Savings Board. It directs the state treasurer to designate the board chairperson, and it requires the board to report annually to the governor and the legislative assembly, and it allows a report to be included within the state treasurer's annual report. The Dash A2 amendment that is before you would require the report of the College Savings Board to be submitted by March 15th of each year, and it deletes the provision that the report could be included within an annual report from the state treasurer. There is no fiscal, on the bill before you, there's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. On the amendment, we are waiting to hear back on the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Jan. Been working on this. So, Michael Savaggio, am I getting better? Would you like to come up, please, Michael, and tell us a little bit about the amendment?
Sure, with the members of the committee. For the record, Mike Savaggio from the State Treasury. And I think the committee minister did a fantastic job summarizing this. We worked with the committee to develop the A2 amendments. Just to put on the record that we're fully supportive of that, we will be taking a biennial report, turning it into an annual report, and setting a deadline of March 15th. Originally, the bill had that being rolled into the Treasury annual report, but as the chair pointed out at the time correctly, we don't really have a statutory deadline for that. We only have a deadline in rule in Treasury. So we did decide that it would be best to maintain a statutory deadline for this particular report. Just for the record, we do intend to roll the top-level data into our annual report anyway, but the legislature will be receiving the full report on or before March 15th of every year now.
Thank you very much. Questions of the committee on the proposed amendment? Chair Hobie, did you have a question?
No.
Thank you. Okay, let's get back to where we are. Okay, so we'll close a public hearing on Senate Bill 16. Thank you, Mike. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 16. Need to move the Dash 2.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 16, dated 5-16-2011.
Chair Hovey moves Dash 2 amendments dated May 16, 2011. Into Senate Bill 16A. Is any discussion? Any opposition? Dash 2s are adopted. You moved the bill before?
No, we don't have the fiscal.
Oh, we don't have the fiscal. Okay, yeah, I thought we got past the bill. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 16. We do not have the financial impact statement back. Okay, committee will open a pub. Let's see, let's don't get ahead of ourselves here.
So do we have any action to do on this one? Who wants to carry it over?
53 is going to be the search.
So there's no amendments or anything to that?
That's correct.
Okay, if anyone's here for Senate Bill 53, we're going to have to reschedule that, that bill. And going to open a public hearing. Open public hearing on Senate Bill 756. We can go ahead and do Jim's amendment if you want to. Okay, Jim, please refresh the committee and bring us up to date on this bill, please.
Senate Bill 756 has not been heard by the committee before. It's a bill that prohibits the sale of gift cards that cannot be redeemed for cash value when the value is less than $5 and the card has been used for at least one purchase. It creates an exemption for cards given for fees for free or for less than face value and for cards that are issued by an entity that provides services subject to the Federal Communications Act. It clarifies that the redemption may be obtained only from the provider indicated on the card, regardless of who sold the card. Before you, you have a -A6 amendment that exempt gift cards used for online purchases of goods or services. There's no fiscal or revenue impact on the amendment and no fiscal or revenue impact on the original bill.
Thank you, Jen. Senator, this is Senator Verger's bill, and I don't see her in the audience at this point.
Her staff is here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize. Good. Come up, please, and introduce. I'm sorry, Josh. We met in Newport.
Yeah, I had some good seafood.
Yeah. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us your concise testimony, please.
Yeah. Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'm Josh Savvy from Senator Verger's office. As you heard, Senate Bill 756 would allow consumers to redeem gift cards when the card's value declines below $5. The idea for Senate Bill 756 originally came from a fellow staff member who was concerned about the lack of recycling for gift cards. As we began our research on this issue, we found that gift cards, the gift card industry is worth about $80 billion. Nearly 10% of that $8 billion is never spent. After further research, we found that four states have a refund policy. Three of these states set this refund at $5 and the other, California, at $10. We think this is a simple bill that will use or that consumers can take more advantage of their funds.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions of Josh, Representative Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for being here, and thanks for your testimony. And you may have the answer to this because it's probably already come up. It's kind of the obvious one. Gift cards, as I've always seen it, if your balance is $350 and you're going to, let's just say, the coffee shop, since we won't give anybody more notoriety, and your drink is $515, typically you apply your gift card and you pay the $1.65 or whatever the difference would be, and then you move on out the door, and that's good for business. If the cards aren't being circulated and they're not being utilized, then I guess that's good for business too, because you know there's $315 on a card or $350 on a card that doesn't ever get used or redeemed. But I'm having a hard time seeing the need to not just continue business as practice, where if somebody wants to use it, they use it for purchase. Even though it's a low amount, they add the money necessary to get it, and then out the door they go. Are we talking really focusing on when there's change due back on a card? Is that what we're talking? Like, as an example, I've got a $5 gift card, and I buy something for $350. Rather than give me a $1.50 credit on my card, you would give me a $1.50 cash. Is that really what we hope to get out here?
Co-chairs and Representative Matthews, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. No, I just...
Other committee questions, committee members? Chair Hovey?
Has Senator Verger had a chance to look at the A6 amendment?
Yes, she has, and co-chairs and members of the committee, she's neutral on the amendments.
Thank you.
Representative Sheehan.
In Section 2, it says that the section does not apply to gift cards that have been given for free. Isn't a gift always given for free?
Co-chairs and Representative Sheehan, the intent of that section is when businesses give gift cards for free for promotional purposes or as a donation, so when somebody doesn't pay for the card originally.
How does the retailer understand that it was given as part of a promotion or handed to somebody for a birthday or what?
Well, I think that would be up for the retailer to determine. We had heard from iTunes, which Jim Craven is here and maybe could testify on, that they often give cards as promotions. So this was to exempt those types of cards.
Paula?
I suppose I think that's difficult to understand if you're a retailer, which cards would be exempt and which wouldn't. If this, anyway, I'm sorry.
Right. No, I agree. I think that if the retailer was not wanting to give a refund back, it would be up to them to determine how they could process that information.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Josh, and be sure the senator knows we appreciate her bringing this forth and you testifying on her behalf this morning.
Thank you.
I have several other people. I don't know, do we need to look at the amendment first? Wanted to have the.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Craven on the amendment.
Yeah, Jim, why don't you come up, Mr. Craven, and give us the amendment, and then we'll go from there. Come on.
Okay.
And Mr. Miller. Good morning. Please identify yourself and provide your concise testimony, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing Tech America, which is a national trade association that represents the high-tech industry, and specifically our member company, Apple, which has a ubiquitous distributor of iTunes gift cards across the country. If I could real briefly try to answer Representative Sheehan's question, while we did not ask for this language, when we did the gift card bill in 2007, this issue did come up. My client, Apple, I understand that oftentimes at concerts actually gives away iTunes gift cards to promote the band. Go home and download 3 songs from this band, see if you like them. Those are gift cards that are given away free as a promotion. So I think that's what this language is referring to, and people will know that for a fact.
Okay.
The A6 amendments that we are offering here today are a narrow exemption for a very specific situation, that is small amounts of residual value that rest in an online account. The language says, it's a single sentence, gift cards redeemed to an online account for the purchase of goods or services. The word redeemed is important here. For those of you who use iTunes or maybe have an Amazon.com account and have used an Amazon gift card, essentially what you do is, particularly with iTunes, is you redeem that value to your account. So you essentially deposit that value into your account where the value of that rests in your name. You're not going to lose that card. It's not going to go away. It's going to stay there. And in the case of Apple, you rarely would have to add extra money to buy something, since you can buy songs down to less than $1. It would be hard to say, I have to leave that money there or else add value to the account, because you can usually clear an iTunes account down to zero at your choice. So the reason we brought this issue up, and we did raise this issue in testimony in the Senate committee, and Senator Shields, the chair of the committee, did allow me to put this on the record at the work session. We thought an amendment coming out was going to include this. It came out right at the last minute. It didn't, so I was allowed to testify at the work session that I would pursue this amendment on the House side. So, and I appreciate Senator Verger's taking a neutral position on this amendment. And the reason we're doing it primarily is because the cost of issuing a refund for a small amount of residual value on an online account could not just exceed the value of the refund, it could perhaps exceed the value of the original gift card totally. A $20 gift card, and you get down to $2. If the company has to check your identity, issue a check, mail the check, do all that work, that could cost the company more than the $20, not just more than the $2. So that's all we're trying to do. There was some concern when we wrote this amendment that it would be a loophole for companies who have both online and bricks and mortar stores, but that's not the case. I know Macy's, I just checked them over the weekend. A Macy's gift card, you can walk into a store and use it, or you can take money off of it while you're buying stuff online at Macy's Online. This says only if you've redeemed the value to an online account. So it's very narrowly drawn, and if you have a Macy's gift card and it's down to less than $5, you can get that cash value in person at a Macy's store, so it doesn't provide any kind of loophole for companies who do both. So that's it, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the time, and appreciate your support for the A6 amendment.
Thank you. Why don't we have Mr. Miller testify, and we'll have questions.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association, and I just wanted to come up and maybe clarify a question that Representative Matthews. If you've ever been into a Fred Meyer or Safeway store, we're major players in the gift card market. We sell a lot of gift cards for a lot of different companies. And we did work with Senator Berger's office on the Senate side to try to clarify this so it's not disrupting the current practice. And I think one of the keys, if you look on lines 12, when it talks about that you cannot sell a gift card unless, it doesn't give the cardholder the option, and the two words there are the option, to redeem under $5. And that's important. It's something we added on the Senate side because we didn't want to, I think, in Representative Matthews' question, require somebody to give change back because in the example you gave on a Starbucks account where you may have $3.50 and the next drink you buy maybe $4 and you're going to spend the 50 cents, most customers want to actually keep that on the card. So we didn't want to require every retailer to give back the change. We wanted to give the option, and we feel that most of the time they're going to leave that money on the account. What this does address is, in some instances, you get a $50 gift card, you go out and you buy an item, a shirt for $49, and you have a dollar back, and this option gives the customer the ability to say, can I have my change back? And at that point, we would say, yes, here's your change. And I can tell you, the retailers I represent from the $5 limit do that now. Now, they have to still use the gift card under this bill one time, so it doesn't ask them to give out a gift card and then go get your change back. So there is several things built into this that we feel comfortable with, and I just want to clarify that on actually having the option is important. Thank you, Mr. Coaches.
Thank you very much. Questions, committee, of both of these witnesses? One of witness.
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Know about gift cards that go, including online gift cards that go unredeemed. What kind of scale are we talking, or what kind of share are we talking?
Well, Mr. Chairs, Representative Smith, I think Senator Berger's staff did provide some of that detail. They did some research on it. I'm not an expert on those numbers.
But on your client, on the client you're representing, what are we talking?
How much is unredeemed?
Yeah.
I do not know the answer. I do believe that most people, and this is anecdotal, is that most iTunes users are fairly active consumers of that,
site. What's most?
I don't know the answer. I don't have data on that, Representative Smith, as to unused values.
Do we track it? I mean, does anybody track it?
Mr. Chairs, Representative Smith, I don't know anybody, meaning internally within companies, I would guess people kind of keep an eye on it. So, but these are not just, I think Mr. Miller knows more about this than I do. This is value that companies do have to account for on their books. It's not just, windfall profit type of money. I don't know.
Mr. Co-Chairs, Representative Smith, I don't know the answer to that. It actually resides within each individual company. So a lot of times, for instance, in our, if you go into a Fred Meyer, we're selling, Borders, Starbucks. We don't know the answer to unclaim to those particular cards and those particular companies. Fred Meyer probably know their own particular card? Yes. But I don't know the answer to your question. I think Senator Berger's office did do some research on just generally what that is. And so you may have a better answer with Josh.
Other than the legislative aid for a legislator, any good place to find? I remember this was something that Senator Westland, worked on. Was the first person I remember who looked at this, and I like gift cards. I do them, and if there are a way to make it more convenient for consumers and for businesses and to facilitate commerce, that's great. If there are a chance for if they are the larger the share of unredeemed. Right, online or otherwise, the more it seems like we want to make sure they're not. We want to make sure they're cool. We want to make sure that they're actually providing a service in the marketplace rather than just a way to get money without providing any service. And understand that, maybe the value of having the card feels good. At Christmas, it provides some economic value, but still, it's not the same. Just get the card. And just don't put any money on it. I just got handed something that said Tower Group Financial Services Firm estimates that consumers left $2.5 billion worth of gift card value on the table in 2010. Do we have any reason to, and thank you for whoever handed me this, any reason to think that number is wrong?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I don't have an opinion on that number.
Okay. If we get to, who would be, other than a staffer for other than an able legislative aide, what would be a good place to find data on what we're, you know, what kind of scale we're talking?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, it seems to me that the Federal Trade Commission has done some work on this. I don't know if they're a repository of macro data, but I know that they have done some work on this issue.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much for that testimony. We have other people testify on this. Mr. Devanovich from Department of Justice. John Bartholomew, and Jim Davis. Let's see, did I get three? Good morning. Welcome. Please identify yourself and provide us your concise testimony on this bill, please.
Good morning, Chair Wisnett, Chair Hovey. My name is Keith Devanovich. I'm Chief of Staff to the Attorney General. Representative Matthews is absolutely correct on the import of this bill, and that is that if you have $4 left on your gift card, and you simply don't want to go back to that retailer, the retailer is now going to be obligated to give you the $4 back. And from a consumer's perspective, you know, if you've got a couple of gift cards that are just sitting in your drawer like I do that are, you know, have $3 on them, having a couple of extra $3 in your pocket in this day and age is a nice thing to have rather than a worthless gift card that you can't use. So from the consumer's perspective, this is a very favorable piece of legislation. I note that this particular bill is very similar to Washington's law and laws in many other states. So this isn't cutting-edge legislation. A lot of other states have a redemption type of requirement as well. And Representative Smith, your question is quite interesting. I believe that the legislature looked at the unredeemed issue a number of years ago in the prior gift card legislation. I believe there's actually even a gift card association. And so there would probably be the knowledge source of all of the money that is unredeemed. There is a substantial amount of money that is unredeemed, though. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Committee members, questions?
I have one, Mr. Chair.
Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Devanovich, do you have any complaints from consumers about the leftover balance on their gift cards and not being able to get cash back?
Co-Chair Holby, Co-Chair Wisnett, and Representative Conger, the complaints we have on gift cards are not about unredeemed amounts.
Thank you.
Any other questions, committee? Representative Smith.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask somebody for an opinion on the I guess the A6 or the A6 amendments. And I'll say, to me, the movie that comes to mind is Superman 3, co-starring Richard Pryor, in which Richard Pryor developed a brilliant scheme to get a fraction of a penny off of every little transaction. And I can't imagine anybody who's upset about losing their fraction of a penny. And I sort of was glad that Richard Pryor, somebody's alarms going off. Richard Pryor was able to get a whole lot of money from doing this and came in with a nice Ferrari after doing it. So I can't imagine we're getting a lot of complaints with this sort of stuff, but we still might not, you know, give Richard Pryor the wherewithal to take on Superman by taking everybody's half a penny. That's not my question.
I'm not sure what it is either.
My question is about the A6 amendments, and if you have an opinion on the amendments, and or if we have a thought of what we want to do with the online thing, because I totally understand the critique. It's, hey, wait a minute, if somebody's coming into Chili's and they got $3 extra, okay, well, that's an in-person relationship. But if all we've got is an online relationship, are we really supposed to mail them a check? Any thoughts on what we ought to do in the online circumstance and how we feel about those amendments?
Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Holby, Representative Smith, we're neutral on the amendment. We recognize that in the online situation, you frankly have an account that's sitting out there in the Ethernet, in the cloud, and it's pretty hard for that company to mail you a check. I think we're somewhat at the cutting edge to be able to come up with a solution at this point, and we'll just have to see how the commerce develops in that area. I think we're looking at a relatively limited number of retailers that work in that sphere. We talked about Amazon, we talked about Apple, but most online retailers have, they either take a Visa card or some other check card or something like that. So that's an easy way to credit back to that particular card, because you're going to still carry that card around.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, committee members?
Go ahead, Mr. Chair. I'll listen to his testimony, but I do have to make a statement.
Okay.
I have to do a supervisory.
Mr. Dubanovich, does Washington and California have the same sort of language that Mr. Craven's proposing?
Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I'm happy to get back to the committee on it, though.
Thank you. Mr. Perthonovich.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Wisnant, Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Bartholomew, policy advocate with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. And we just want to throw our support behind this bill as a very basic consumer protection in that, it allows the consumer to make the decision as to how to, spend these small remainders of their money on these gift cards. In a manner better suited to what their personal situation is. In today's day and age, with gas around $4 a gallon, it might actually cost more to go back to a particular restaurant or store than they would get back in this particular, the gift card was still worth. You know, it's like if I wanted to go to a Red Robin, I had a Red Robin card, but I live 50 miles from there, and there's only $4 left on the card, what's the point? So, as was noted before, this is already law in several other states, including Washington, California, and Colorado, and Maine, Montana. Its policy is working around the nation, and is just, it's a good consumer protection proposal. So that's my...
Thank you. I'll have Mr. Davis, and then we'll have questions. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Would you identify yourself and provide us your testimony, please?
Thank you. I'm Jim Davis. I'm the president of the Oregon Consumer League, which has been fighting for the rights of consumers since 1966. We wanted to offer our support of Senate Bill 756. We have really appreciated the work that the legislature has been doing around gift cards going back to the 07 session. And we think that this is a very appropriate piece of legislation. We have long felt that consumers deserve to get full value from the gift cards that they purchase, and they oftentimes don't. This bill will allow them to get whatever money is still left on their card and to be able to get it in a more efficient way and to be able to utilize their gift card monies most effectively. So we strongly support Senate Bill 756.
Thank you. Committee members, questions?
Yeah, Mr.
President Matthews.
Mr. Chair, this is just a comment, not necessarily for anybody to respond to, but I think it's worth noting. This bill came over to us from the Senate 30-0. So I didn't come here today thinking I was going to stand on some sort of a grandstand and say, oh, we're going to kill this bill today at all. But the way we're characterizing this is somewhat almost predatory on business' standpoint, that they're going to have a get-rich scheme to make these cards available. These cards are available because guys like me don't go shopping in time. So as a last minute on an anniversary day, I go to Safeway and I pull one off the rack and I buy it and my wife's happy. Okay? It's great. But the bottom line is, I really think we've got to understand that there's no restrictions on these cards. Oftentimes, people are getting these as a gift, or they're buying them as gifts. People are redeeming them for items that may be on sale, maybe on clearance sale. They have the ability to take those items back, redeem those as, to get items received back. So there's no restrictions on the use of the card. It's like receiving cash, but it's not. We're characterizing this almost as, well, there's a scheme out there where business is getting rich, and they're taking advantage of all these $1.29 deals on these consumers. I don't believe that's true. I support the bill, but I don't support the conversation that makes it seem like somehow business is getting rich on this scheme. I don't believe it's a scheme. I think it's out of convenience. I think we need to remember, too, that those cards that are not redeemed are still redeemable. they're not disappeared out there in the world of society. We talk about non-redeemed or non-refunded depositories in terms of recyclables, but the bottom line on those is, yeah, a lot of those are in the landfill. A lot of those did get thrown out. I don't think that's the case in gift cards. Just because they didn't get redeemed last year and there's $2.5 billion, that $2.5 billion could come slap that same business in the face next year or 2 years from now. There aren't restrictions on these cards. It's important to note. I just wanted to bring that conversation back because the direction we're going seems almost like, wow, I can't believe predatory businesses are actually making cards available for guys like me to buy. Shame on them. It's just, sorry. But, and that's not in Superman 3. That's just simply from me.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. So the I, too, am at least as lazy as Representative Matthews when it comes to purchasing. And I would take no backseat to anyone in the room when it comes to shopping laziness. And probably would take no backseat for the purchase of gift cards. I will say that my desire, and I hope that our shared desire, to be consumer protection actors on the Consumer Protection Committee is not contra to the industry, but in fact in the benefit of it. Because I think if we make it the kind of thing that is that has a lower percentage of unredeemed, has a lower number, a fewer number of Richard Pryor Lamborghinis, it will build confidence in the in that market endeavor and make it still socially acceptable for me to be the lazy shopper that I am. So the my position is I believe ultimately in favor of gift cards. I do have a question on the online stuff. Jim, do you have any?
I need to bring him back. We can't do it.
I can't ask the question.
They need to ask him. Oh, you're talking about Mr. Davis. I thought you were talking about Mr. Craven.
No. Yeah, Jim Davis.
I'm sorry. Continue, please.
Any thought of what we should do in the online context? Right? Is there a way to make sure that we have, you know, that we keep the amount of unredeemed dollars manageable in the online context?
Well, this certainly is not an area that I have great expertise in. I would simply say that I can understand the concerns of the online people to not have to go out of their way to redeem checks and to make it more efficient for both sides. Our concern is that consumers have easy access to get the money they have invested in gift cards and to get that back or to be able to invest it in products that they need. And at no time have we in any way thought that, you know, businesses were taking a negative perspective on this or were predatory in any way. Our concern has always been that consumers get the full value out of these cards and have the easiest access to being able to do that, and that's really it. That's as simple as we want to make it. And so the online aspect, I'm not an expert in that, but again, we want consumers to have access, the easiest access to their money and to the products these gift cards can purchase.
Yeah, I'm about no anyway.
If I may respond to that too. Co-chairs and Representative Smith, regarding the amendment specifically, Osberg doesn't. We're neutral on that particular amendment. Two, on the issue of both where to get more information about the situation of this and the future of the online retailers and how that's going to all play out over time, I think that's going to be a major part of the role of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau at the federal level. They're going to be tracking this kind of information. They're going to be monitoring how things are done. And looking out for consumers' perspectives. And lastly, I would say I'm kind of surprised that you didn't choose Office Space as your reference point.
That's a good point.
So for taking small amounts of money.
It's an epidemic, is what you're saying. It's an epidemic. Yeah, I got it.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much, committee members. Good testimony, and thank you, panel, for your help. So we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 756. Stand at ease a moment, please. I think I got it. on Senate Bill 756A.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 6 amendments dated May 11, 2011 to Senate Bill 756.
Chair Hovey moves dash 6 amendments dated May 11, 2011 to Senate Bill 756. Discussion? Any opposition? We'll adopt the dash 6 amendments dated May 11, 2011 to Senate Bill 756.
And Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 756 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Chair Hovey moves Senate Bill 756 to the floor with a two-pass as amended recommendation. Discussion? Tamara, please call the roll.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Representative Sheehan.
I feel like I'm unpunked. This is really what we're here doing? I mean, this is...
Watch, come in.
This is a... It's a gift. So, if I get an ugly sweater, what's my recourse? This is a gift. I just don't get why we're here voting on something like this. This is not what I was sent here to do. I'm a no.
Other discussion? Representative Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do recognize that, people buy these gift cards with cash and sort of currency of the particular vendor that they buy them from, and should be able to recover that as such. So I will be supporting the bill.
Other comments? If not, Cameron, please call the roll.
Representative Cameron.
Excused.
Representative Clapp.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
No.
Vice Chair
Sheehan. Yes.
Chair Colby.
Aye.
Chair Wisdom.
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on Senate Bill 756. And Representative Smith, would you like to carry that?
Deeply.
I'm a sponsor of it.
We have three members that are sponsors.
He's a chief sponsor. I'm just a co-sponsor. But I wanted to
I'd like to carry it.
Yeah.
We'll all carry it.
Okay, sure. Committee, we've got some business here.
Just because you're a chief sponsor. Come on. Well,
that's what
I could be doing.
Just really
passed. Okay. Yeah.
Senator, come back. If Floyd want to touch on this one again. What do we have to do?
Chief,
and we're going to. We had Representative or Senator Buzanski talk on 846. We're going to carry that over. We'll go to. We have some actions on this one. We can do the.
292, you've adopted that.
We've already done that.
Talk about Bill Perry's orange shirt for a little bit in an informational hearing.
Do you want to hear Dewey speak on his amendment? Do we have that? Okay, yeah. Hey, gentlemen, at ease, please.
Oh, we weren't.
Yeah, certainly, if you want to.
Just final.
Okay, all right, okay. Still at recess? Let's stay at recess.
3 is not recess.
294. That's the big recess. We just got that one back, right? Got the big amendment that we just got back.
We're carrying that over.
We can do the dash 7, that's it.
487.
You can adopt the dash 7 on 487.
Okay, who brought that? The emergency can do it. But,
so you want to.
Okay, let's open up a public hearing and hear his comments on his amendment for that.
Okay.
Committee, go back on the record, please. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 487A. Jan, tell us where we are on this bill.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the bill that prohibits the offers of automatic renewal or continuous service arrangements unless the offer complies with disclosure requirements. At the beginning of the meeting, we heard from Senator Bonamici on this. You have four amendments before you. There's the A4, which came from Sean Miller that we discussed at the last meeting. The dash A6 has been proposed by Ted Hughes. The dash A7 is proposed by Mike Dewey. And the dash 8 is... was my Sean Miller's amendment that had been further amended. It deals with exempting those plans that are the 30-day or less plans.
Okay, so we have two amendments before us,
7 and 8.
Mr. Miller and Mr. Dewey, would you please come up and discuss the amendments to this bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Mike Dewey, for the record, representing DeHart and Darr. They provide, they represent companies like Time Inc., Better Homes and Gardens, book clubs, and the like. And I have offered up the Dash 7 amendment, which I was pleased to hear that Senator Bonamici would support. I'll do this very briefly, but also I think, Mr. Co-Chairs, you ought to consider, and I think there is in the offering, perhaps not ready yet, and I don't think you have a fiscal, to take off the emergency clause similar to what is in 292, depending on what happens to that bill.
That was 7 is emergency. That's not?
No. The emergent, we haven't, I don't think, have seen that one at this point, but I do think that would be appropriate just to give, if this bill were to pass, to give businesses the opportunity to comply with the new rules. This is the first time that I've come before this committee on this bill, and basically this is now, we're talking about automatic renewal, and the terms and conditions by which a company provides those provisions as to how you are going to have automatic renewal. So I take this billing that I received from Bon Appetit, and I'm not obligated to pay this. I just received a bill, and it would have potentially on here automatic renewal. And if I send the information back and provide a check, I can't really comply with the terms and conditions of this bill. And I'll tell you why. First, in our amendment fixes that for these kinds of transactions. The first part is, under the requirement of the bill, the company that Bon Appetit would have to acknowledge receipt of what the terms and conditions were for automatic renewal, by which the consumer can retain that information. And we can't do that under this kind of business transaction. So what our billing, what our amendment does is allow us to provide those terms and conditions for automatic renewal in the billing. Now the key here is most of the complaints you have, I believe, are online type of complaints, internet. With regard to automatic renewal, I'm not obligated when I pay by check under this transaction, even if there was automatic renewal, I could say, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to pay it. Now, that's why this is, it's not important from that standpoint for this amendment, but I just point out with regard to these kinds of transactions, the consumer's in charge. Now, we agree with regard to the credit card and debit card part that that's a different story and the leverage of the consumer is gone. But with regard to these kinds of transactions, the consumer is in charge. So we can't comply with sections A or C of this bill currently, but we would comply by virtue of the A7 amendment, by virtue of having that information, the terms and conditions in the bill. And so people can see what they are, and they can then retain that information if they want. Under the amendment, we literally can't apply it. It would be an unlawful trade practices. So with that, I'd be happy to stop, and if there are any questions, be happy to answer those questions.
Okay, Mr. Miller, go ahead and give us yours first.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of Assurian, and Tuesday I discussed the issue of month-to-month where it is renewed. It's often on the products that we're talking about, whether it's a data backup plan or actually billed on a third party's billing, such as your cell phone bill. for instance. Under the bill and the way the bill was written, it sucks in these 30-day rolling month-to-month. As the consumer pays, you get the service that the customer wants. As Mr. Dewey indicated, these are services that the consumer does have control. I understand the bill is trying to address the online scams, and I do understand that. However, we do not want to suck in these legitimate products that are would be covered under this bill and unreasonably require the company to get the consent of the customer every time you want to continue from a month-to-month product, such as the products that I discussed on Tuesday. So when at the hearing on Tuesday, I know Representative Holvey, Co-Chair Holvey, addressed in the dash A4 some concerns about the definite term, even though we wanted to make sure that it allows the consumer to cancel within 30 days on these month-to-month products. So what we did is we, in the A8, we actually defined the definite term as a paid subscription or purchasing agreement for a term of 31 days or less. This takes those products, those month-to-month products, out of the definition of automatic renewal. And I sent this to Mr. Domanovich from the Attorney General's office. We did discuss that the scope of the bill was not to bring in these products. However, I know late yesterday evening, I did receive some information from the Attorney General that there was some online scams that did occur on these monthly. So I want to at least be honest with the committee, even though the AG's office edited my amendment, they did outline some concerns. However, this amendment is important into solving an issue, I think an oversight in the bill on these month-to-month products. And so if we need to modify the A8 amendment, you know, I'm more than happy to work with the Attorney General's office on that. But the A8 does solve our particular issue with the bill, and with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr.
Mr. Hughes, would you want to come up and talk first on your amendment? We have questions, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
I'm sure I have to remind you, as a new member, to identify yourself.
My name is Ted Hughes, here this morning representing the Entertainment Software Association. And we offered the amendment that the sponsor of the bill, the senator, said she thought would weaken the legislation. I think that was her comment on it. We offered the amendment because for the vast majority of businesses that do business this way are honest, good marketeers. And I think the senator said that in her introduction. So this amendment would be for the majority of businesses that do this. That's what I'm offering it for this morning. And it simply does, and I can't see how it can weaken her bill. A person is not liable for violation of a provision of this section if the person demonstrates that the person has attempted to comply in good faith. Well, A, I won't read it to you. A and B, it sounds to me like it's odd that we have to put language like this in legislation to make sure that everybody's treated by it. And it doesn't make sense to me that we have to print it. It seems like common sense. But anyway, this is for the vast majority of businesses that do business properly.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Committee members, questions for these members, for this panel? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it looks like most of the language in here deals with debit cards, credit cards. What if somebody pays cash or a check or the renewals? Or a gift card. Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Co-chairs, Representative Sheehan. So we're talking about really automatic renewals. So let's go back and you agree to receive something, and at the same time, and usually where the leverage is on a credit card or a debit card, because not on check or cash. But
at some point, you need to, if you don't act, you'll continue to have your credit card or debit card charged. So you need the information on how to, you need to know you have the right to cancel the automatic renewal at the appropriate time, and how you go about doing it. And this bill speaks to that. And that is something that, you know, a good business ought to do. There's no question about it. I mean, this is a difficult roadmap to follow here in this bill. So when you get to a check, I mean, that's a different situation, because you're in control and you can decide that you don't want to continue to have that product. Cash would be the same thing. That's why I think you have to have some sort of provision in a bill that deals with, if you're going to have a bill, with the credit card side of the equation. But again, the consumer's in the position, as Mr. Miller said, of having the leverage under a cash or a check scenario. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Mr. Co-Chairs, I may point out, Representative Sheehan, that in some cases, though, this would apply without the A8 amendment, where it would apply even in the check circumstance, I believe. And I need to check that, because a lot of times it would be a third party where you're paying, let's say, your bill, and it's automatically renewing as a part of that bill. And so, again, the consumer does have the leverage, because they continue to pay month to month. And so that's one of the things I'm trying to address.
Other questions, committee members? Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Huddle from Deschutes County.
Thank you.
Sorry, John almost overlooked in all this shuffling back and forth. So if you'll provide us your concise testimony. You testified on this earlier, I think. So.
Yeah, I wanted to clarify a few things.
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself.
John Huddle from Deschutes County. Thank you, co-chairs and committee. One of the things that concerned me after the testimony, you think back on things, is there really wasn't a face to who's being victimized by these automatic renewals. So I did a little research, and what I found was that there's two areas that I think are particularly vulnerable. One is our military. You have young people that are away from home the first time. They're lonely. They get into these deals. It looks great, and then they're shipped off, and they can't get out of it. They're being billed, and their wives are dealing with it, or their spouses, or they're simply unable to handle it. And I found complaints of that. And the other that is particularly concerning to me are our senior citizens. And one example that I found, I provided in an email to you, is Bank of America was charging a 98-year-old woman who didn't drive anymore, but they had slipped in, started as a free offer, and then it was, you don't cancel, you kept renewing. Well, what happened was her niece, I think the lady was deceased, and her niece discovered that she was being charged and had been. So it's not just the scammer out there that pulls this. It is big business doing this to increase their revenue, to increase their market share, things like that. And it's our most vulnerable that are hit with this. It's not, most of us can handle it. We deal with it, as I testified, and we win. But it's our vulnerable that don't. The other thing I want to point out, particularly to the less than 30-day or the 30-day renewals, if that's going, for instance, on your wireless telephone bill, that may be buried under a term, long-distance charges, as I find on my Verizon bill. And then you don't know that you're being automatically renewed. It's just happening. And unless you happen to call up and say, what's the long-distance charge I'm being charged for, you don't know it's there. The other thing is that I recently had a call from a newspaper from Central Oregon. I think they're using a third party to generate their subscriptions, and said, would you like to renew? We got this offer for you. And I said, no, I'm not interested. Well, we've got you down as non-payment. I said, no, I paid for a select period of time. Well, we've sent it to collection. So I wouldn't be so sure that even though if you paid by cash or check, that there aren't some other less scrupulous ways that they're trying to force people to renew, or they're, you know, there's some harm. And what I found is that this is a very complicated issue, that there's an awful lot of different ways. It might start out as a free offer, and then all of a sudden it's a renewal issue because there was other things that were being added on. So it's complicated.
Thank you for that additional testimony, sir. Any questions, committee? Thank you very much.
Just one real quick. I noticed you referenced an email that you sent, and I hadn't seen it until I just pulled it up just now, that you did have an email that you sent to the committee administrator and wanted it into the record just for the committee's information.
One of the people that I talked to, because I tried to think of the least vulnerable people, you know, in terms of dealing with technology. So I called a friend of mine, Bob Maxwell, our Medal of Honor recipient, who I know does not deal with any technology. He doesn't have email address, doesn't have any of this. I said, have you had this problem? He said, yes. And I said, well, with your permission, I would like to submit that in testimony. He's on an honor flight to Washington, D.C. right now. So,
thank you, John. Thank you for your testimony, sir. Have a safe trip.
Okay.
Okay, Chair Hovey asked if Mr. Dubanovich would agree to an additional question or make himself available. Please identify yourself again before you.
Chair Wisnick, Co-Chair Hovey, my name is Keith Dubanovich. I'm Chief of Staff to the Attorney General. In follow-up on a couple of questions that have arisen, I went back and pulled out my files on this. There are approximately a dozen states that already have some laws that address automatic renewals, so we're not alone in it. In our laws, I indicated earlier, is quite similar to California's, or this bill is similar to California's. On the amendments, on Tuesday, Mr. Miller presented the A4. I spoke with him shortly thereafter, and I'll accept responsibility for the A8. I was hoping that in an effort of simplicity, we would be able to resolve his issues and present to you a very simple little amendment. Fortunately for me, there are some smarter people in the Financial Fraud and Consumer Protection section that appropriately noted that there are, frankly, a lot of problems in month-to-month renewal contracts. And that the FTC has attempted to go after some of these companies, and that they haven't been completely successful, which is why there are a dozen state statutes that are attempting to rein in the problem. The problem is that there are fairly small items that show up on a credit card statement, and the consumer has no earthly idea how to cancel it, and it just stays on the credit card statement on a month-to-month basis. So it may be cancelable on a 30 days notice, but they don't know how to cancel it, and the credit card statement doesn't define who the company is with any accuracy, so it's quite difficult for them to track it down. I spoke with Mr. Miller before today's hearing, indicated that I understood his concerns and the position of his client, and indicated my willingness to try and work with him. There are certainly legitimate companies that have a need to be able to continue to renew the service on a month-by-month basis, and so I think we're going to try and work out some language that meets his needs and his client's needs, but will also protect Oregon consumers. We have no opposition to the A7 amendment, but we do have substantial concerns about the A6 amendment. In our view, first of all, good faith is always a defense. So you don't need to put it into the statute that good faith is a defense. It always is and always can be raised as a defense to any kind of litigation. Second of all, the attempt to address what is a bona fide error or good faith is unfortunately something that has been litigated a lot. It is a term that is in the Federal Debt Collection Practices Act, and the case reports are replete with litigation over what's good faith or what's not good faith. And we're reluctant to put that into Oregon law because it's going to engender a lot of litigation and therefore a lot of expense, not only to the Department of Justice, but to businesses and to consumers. Third, I'm not sure what someone could be violating. The law requires disclosures, and you either give the disclosures or you don't give the disclosures. It's fairly clear. It's not something where it's subject to interpretation or negotiation. And last but not least, the subpart B in the A6 amendment appears to simply allow the business to refund the amount that was billed to the consumer, and then they're essentially free from any liability. Now, in a vacuum, if it's only a one-time event, that sounds fair. But the reality is that the kind of cases that the Department of Justice brings are against companies that are repeat offenders, companies that have not done it on one occasion, but on dozens and dozens of occasions. And one of the provisions of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act is the ability to impose essentially a statutory penalty that is greatly going to be in excess of whatever the amount that's refunded. And if a company becomes exempt from that statutory penalty simply by refunding the consumer the $395 that was billed, they have no fear because the Department of Justice can't do anything about it. So in our view, the Dash 6 Amendment would, as one advisor to me called it, a disaster to Oregon law. So we're therefore opposed to the Dash 6 Amendment.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Keith, I appreciate you coming forward, and I was curious about whether or not you saw a pathway for working with Mr. Miller on the Dash 8 to address his concerns, but still maintain some integrity in our consumer protection.
Chair Wisnant, Chair Holvey, I do. Mr. Miller has been quite frank with me, and we've worked together well, and I think we both have a common interest. He has a good client that is trying to do and provide a legitimate service, and we don't want to put them into any difficult position. I fully understand it just isn't practical to get positive assent on a month-by-month basis for somebody to continue insurance coverage on their cell phone. Fully get that. And so we've got to figure out, I'm not sure how right now, but we've got to figure out how to protect that business, but at the same time protect the consumer who gets the repeat $295 charge on their credit card or their phone bill, and there's no way for them to cancel it, and there's no access for what the service is, and they may not even know that they're getting a service because they signed up for it as part of a package, as you know, either a free trial or a sign-up package. And so I think we can find some language, and I'm determined to do so.
Thank you. I was hopefully you're able to get together and, you know, get some of your smart people, I guess, together with Mr. Miller to get some because I'd like to see a solution in that particular case if possible. If you can get something into drafting tomorrow, it'd be hopefully in time.
We'll do so, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, committee members, other questions? Representative Conklin.
Just a comment. I think generally support the concept of the bill, and I recognize that there is a problem that might or might not be resolved through additional disclosure requirements, but, it's probably worth a try. But at some point, people have to take responsibility for their own actions and the things that they sign up for. And I think we are trailing off into the absurd at this point with the number of amendments and the amount of time that we're spending on this. I do think that eventually there has to be a point at which we accept that the individual does have to have both a responsibility when they sign up for something, also a responsibility when they see something's wrong. I think there's recourse available to them now. The problem is they may not recognize it. It may be very difficult for them to access that recourse. So, you know, maybe taking some steps in the right direction is a good thing, but we could also get down to the point where we're really not doing any good anymore. We've reached the point of diminishing returns, is the words I was looking for.
Go Co-Chair Hovey, Co-Chair Wisnant, Representative Conger, you're absolutely correct. And one of the things we spend a lot of time with is consumer education. The reality is that a lot of problems could be avoided if the consumer spent the time to read the contract. And of the thousands and thousands of calls that our consumer hotline gets, a vast majority of them are resolved simply by having the consumer communicate with the business one-on-one. And that's, frankly, the best way that business is conducted, and that's why we can save consumers a lot of time, just getting them to dialogue with the business.
Thank you very much. Other questions, committee members? I appreciate your offer to work with I think we're all trying to look for good policy. It will protect the consumers, but not hurt those good businesses that are doing right. And I appreciate your working with the business community to see if we can find a good bill that we can pass. So thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 487. Okay. Go off the air, give it. Committee members, for the record, we're going to carry over to Tuesday, May the 24th, Senate Bill 16 and Senate Bill 53, and we'll be rescheduling Senate Bill 846, Senate Bill 292, Senate Bill 294, Senate Bill 487, and Senate Bill 491, for the record. With that, no other business before the committee, we'll adjourn the committee. Thank you very much.